Have you ever gotten to a place in life where you find yourself asking, what now? That's right. What now? Circumstances and situations have happened. You feel as if you've been hit from the left and the right. You feel as if nothing that you do ends up working out the way that you desire for it to work out, and you just don't know what you need to do right now. The reality is we've all been there. And sometimes we've been there without the tools, techniques, and strategies to help us make effective decisions to produce the future that we desire. You don't have to do this alone anymore. I invite you to listen to my podcast. That's right. My name is Clifton Pettyjohn. I'm a purpose strategist, author, transformation coach, and spiritual leader. And I host the What Now podcast. And the What Now podcast is simply conversations that teach us how to effectively face life's most difficult moments. That's right. Life's most difficult moments. So, if you're interested in hearing the podcast, I encourage you to visit my website, www.cliftonpettyjohn.com. Again, www.cliftonpettyjohn.com. There's a tab for the podcast, and you can pick your favorite platform. We're available on multiple platforms, so you can pick your favorite platform, pick the platform, subscribe to the podcast, listen, comment, and share. All right? So I encourage you again, make sure that you are listening to the What Now podcast. What's up, everybody? My name is Clifton Pettyjohn, and you are listening to Transformation Radio, where we transform lives through purposeful conversation. Hey, what's up, everybody? Welcome back to Transformation Radio. That's right, Transformation Radio, where we transform lives through purposeful conversations, regardless of how uncomfortable and unpopular those conversations are. As I said in the intro, my name is Clifton Pettyjohn. I'm a purpose strategist, author, transformation coach, and spiritual leader. I provide tools and strategies to transition individuals from merely existing to living a life full of purpose. Now, if you've heard the show before, you already know the exercise that we are about to do. So I want everybody that has not been a part of the show before to join with those of us that have, and let's complete this exercise. This exercise will tell you if I am talking to you when I'm talking about purpose. Am I talking to you when I say that there's purpose in your life? All right, so here's what we're going to do. We're going to do this two times. We're going to take a deep breath in. We're going to hold it. Breathe out. One more time, deep breath in. Hold it. Breathe out. Ooh, I got to get to the gym. That's a little harder to do now. Anyway, if you were able to breathe in and breathe out, that means that there's breath. That means that there is breath remaining in your body. Therefore, if breath is still left in your body, purpose still remains. All right, purpose still remains. So yes, I am talking to each and every one of you listening to me tonight. There is purpose locked inside of you. And one of the purposes of this show is to draw you closer to the realization of the purpose that is lodged inside of you. And tonight we have an amazing guest that's going to join the conversation, and many of you are going to be able to connect with her in her story. And as you connect with her in her story, you'll realize there's purpose inside of you, okay? So listen, again, thank you all for joining us on tonight. After this show, guys, we only have 4 more shows, and season 2 is over. And as I said on the last show, there's some new ventures that we're about to experience, and I'm excited about the newness that we're about to experience. But I packed this month with some amazing guests. Why? Because I wanted us to finish strong. I wanted us to finish strong. We started strong. We were strong in the middle of the season, and now we're going to finish strong, all right? Now, I also put out there, if you're out there, you're an individual that has an idea for a podcast or a radio show, but you don't know what to do, no problem. I need you to connect with me. Why? Because I am sponsoring 2 individuals. I'm about to launch a radio network, so I'm sponsoring 2 individuals for an entire year. I'm going to cover the cost of production and everything. I'm not covering the cost of equipment. Now, I did say if you live close to me, you know, we can meet up, and if it's a day I'm not recording, you are welcome to use my equipment. However, you have to sign a release form, okay? But we can link up and do it that way. But listen, I'm looking for 2 individuals that want to start a show. They don't know what to do. They need the help. And financially, they're just not able to do it right now. And here's why I'm doing this. Guys, for a year and a half, Miss Yvonne Mason, she is, I guess you would say, the CEO of the Off the Chain Network here. And she has completely sponsored this show. I haven't had to come out of my pocket for anything. The only thing I had to come out of my pocket for was for the equipment that I purchased. But she just told me, the only thing I want you to do, Cliff, is to pay it forward. So I'm honored that she did this for me. So now, since she took time out to invest in me being one person, I'm going to spread the wealth, and I'm going to invest in 2 individuals for a year and a half to get you on your feet so that you can get used to it. Guys, if you listen to our show all the way back a year and a half ago and you listen now, and you may hear some hiccups in the show now, but if you heard it a year and a half ago, man, boy, it was a challenge. I did not know what I was doing when I sat behind this microphone. I didn't have any professional equipment. The sound was horrible. I just didn't understand anything, but I did understand this very thing, that there was a need for this show. And I put it off long enough. So you're out there, you're listening, you know there's a need. There are individuals that need to hear your voice. They need to hear your story. They need to experience your interpretation of purpose through your radio show, through your podcast. So I want you to reach out to me. You can reach out to me at 302-648-5544. You can text me on that number, or you can leave a message, and somebody from my team will get back with you, all right? So let's keep going here. We're going to run one ad, and then we're going to come back. I'm going to introduce our guests, and we're going to dive right into the conversation. Are you thinking of selling or buying your dream home? Then contact Harrison Domerkin, the people's agent. As a licensed realtor in both Delaware and Maryland, Harrison desires to help you sell or buy your home, and he promises you that your experience with him will be great. Call or text him today at 302-260-0659 or email him at harrisondomerkin@gmail.com. All right, awesome. Just want to remind you too, Harrison will be on the show this Friday night at 10 p.m. So make sure you tune in. He was on before. However, we had some technical difficulties and the audio did not record. So he's coming back on, and he gave us a lot, guys, a lot of information concerning real estate and, you know, just his own personal journey. So make sure you tap in on Friday night. But tonight, guys, I want to tell this story, and it's not going to be a long story because I know you're probably tired of listening to me. But a couple years ago, because we didn't get to have Delaware Pride this year, but I had the privilege of meeting 2
young ladies. I had a table at Delaware Pride. I had my book out there, and they came up to the table, and we began to engage in conversation. And if you know me, you already know that I love outcasts. I love those who, at a first glance, if you are a person that only looks at people's outward appearance, you wouldn't see the value of who they really are. And I loved her because her hair was bright, and she just had this energy, and I just enjoyed the conversation I had with the two ladies. And I said, I have to have this young lady on my show. And she agreed to come on the show. So I'm excited to have her tonight. She's a pastor. She's a writer. She is a domestic violence survivor, guys. So, and there's so much more to her, so much more to her. But you know, we don't read bios on here. So I'm going to allow you guys to be introduced to her from the conversation. So help me welcome Christine Theriault Marcall. Did I get it right? How are you, Christine?
Very good. Very good.
Did
I'm doing
get it right?
Well. Theriault Marcall. Very good. Better than
okay.
Most.
I tried my best. I just wanted to get as close as possible.
And you did. You did very well buttering me up by calling me a young lady. I don't know what, how many times, but that was good. That was very well done.
Yes, I remember the conversation. Since, you know, I met you two, I just was, y'all were such a breath of fresh air. Every now and then you meet individuals that a conversation, a simple conversation, not even about, we didn't talk about anything deep, we didn't talk about anything profound, but it was just a breath of fresh air. So I'm glad you're here with us tonight.
Well, thank you. Thank you. I'm glad to be doing this. I'm glad we had to cancel the last time. I was scheduled, and so I'm so grateful that I'm able to do it tonight.
Absolutely, absolutely. So let's get the conversation underway. I always start with an icebreaker question, and I use the same icebreaker question on every guest, and I'll explain why after I answer, after I ask it. Okay, well, after you answer. That question is, if you could have one superpower, what would that superpower be and why?
I actually have an answer to this. I would like to have the ability. See, I'm an empath. So I would like to have the ability to absorb people's pain and then feed it back out to people who deserve it. now, we're talking about, you know, if I was actually in the comic book, you know.
I got you.
That's what, you know, in real life, a superpower, no. But, you know, if I could have my own graphic novel, it was something like that. I would want to have that power. Yeah.
I understand it. And I'm going to go off of the first part you said about absorbing people's pain. Here's why I asked this question. Mm-hmm. Because 99.9% of the individuals, my statistic team has put together some stats that answer that question, always answer it based upon what it is that they do in life. Whether it's, you know, and when I think about, you know, the conversation I had with you, you know, from your personal experiences of pain and hurts that you've experienced, I see you as a person that would like to, I wouldn't want that person to have to go through that. If I could take that for them, then I would take that for them. Mm-hmm. And them not have to worry about it. So that's why I always like to start every conversation with that question, because it kind of helps the listening audience learn more about the person in a fun way.
Right. That's a great question.
We're going to play a game. Word association. I have five words for you. As I said off the air, you're welcome to sing. I don't think we've had anybody sing on here. We might have had one person sing. on here. I can't remember if anybody has sung.
I guarantee you won't get me to sing.
Me either.
You won't,
so
you won't have
I understand.
Turn the show off. If I sing.
So you can either give a one-word answer, one-sentence answer, or you can elaborate on the word however you want to. Now, if it's a word, you give a definition or you give an interpretation that's like real intriguing, I'm going to take the conversation that route, and then we'll wrap back around. Sometimes we don't finish the game till the end of the conversation. But,
all right.
You know, that's the type of fluid how we go on this show. So
okay,
the first word. The first word is life. Life.
Favor.
Okay. Right. The next word is freedom.
Spiritual.
Okay. I'm writing these down so we can go back to them.
And now, I really want to sing, but I won't.
Oh, go ahead and sing.
No. I'm thinking, oh, freedom, you know, that kind of thing. So.
And we're going to go back to life and freedom because I really want to talk about life versus existing, you know, living life to the fullest
versus existing
and all of those things. So we're going to go back to that. The third word is faith.
Necessary.
The next word is transformation.
Oh. Labor.
And then the last word is
Wow, that's you know, I've been thinking about purpose. Accountability.
Now let's stay right there for a minute. Why do you think of the word accountability as it relates to purpose?
Well, I think I think about the stuff that I have gone through in my life, and you know, the pain I've had, the trauma that I've gone through, and the things that I've had to carry. And, you know, as long as those things, as long as I can find purpose in them, that's good. And I can handle it. And so often, for me, it's come down to holding people accountable. And to me, it's really a long stretch in some ways, but you wanted the first word that came to me. So it was accountability, because to me, if I can kind of gain somebody coming to taking account of what they've done or being accountable or somebody being held accountable, then I think I've found purpose. In what I've experienced.
Got you. Now you kind of answered. I was great to ask you, okay, how do you find purpose in the different traumas or experiences that you had? But then you wrapped it back around and said, you know, if you can hold individuals responsible for their role that they played in it, then you can find that set purpose in it. Now, what about this now? What if you're looking for purpose in something, you're looking to hold individuals responsible, but they refuse to be accountable for their role in that set experience or trauma?
That is a hard one. And I think I'm still trying to work on that in a lot of ways. You know, some of it is finding my voice. Because when you want to have somebody be accountable for what they've done, you talk about it, you know, and you,
mm-hmm.
you know, words for me are very powerful. So I have tried to, you know, write, I've tried to speak, I've tried to, you know, have conversations with people, and to be able to, sometimes just being able to have that story be told, so
mm-hmm.
that it can't be escaped by people, can help. But it's a tough one. You know, I've struggled with how do I forgive people that I'm not ready to forgive? How do I deal with my anger? When
mm-hmm.
I'm still angry about things that happened. And, you know, letting go is not always easy. And I don't always think that we should let go. You know, somebody's got to keep fighting battles, even if we know that they're losing battles. So then it comes back to, I feel purpose in continuing to tell the story. Because the more I tell it, the more someone else might tell it. And maybe the next
mm-hmm.
person will be held accountable. So if I can't, my wife said this, she said, if I can't get justice, then I want to expose the injustice.
Absolutely.
And so exposing the injustice at least gives me a sense of comfort when I can't. When people, you know, nobody wants to be held accountable for what they do. I don't,
mm-hmm.
you know.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's hard to do that. But, yeah, as long as I can kind of tell the story and make it a little bit easier for the next person, I can gain something from that.
And I think that that's how momentum is built as well. I think that when you find what your purpose is as it relates to, in this instance, telling your story, because you were talking about how sometimes you have to still tell it even if justice isn't necessarily served or that person
right.
isn't held responsible for it. But yet in telling it, you might give strength and encouragement to the next person to tell their story, and then eventually somebody is going to be held accountable. And I think that sometimes individuals aren't held accountable because the story stopped being told.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Do you remember Me Too, the Me Too movement? I mean, when did that stop?
Yes, yes, absolutely.
You know,
absolutely.
It cycled out of the news almost. You
mm-hmm.
know, my prayer ever since, you know, the horrible killing of George Floyd has been, Lord, don't let this stop.
yeah.
You know, it's been too many hundred years.
Yeah.
Let this keep going. Because I'm worried that, you know, people, and when I say people, I mean like my people, white people, are going to say, well, we had a black president. What, now we're going to have, you know, a black woman vice president, God willing. You know, that should be enough. No, it's not.
Yeah.
Because we aren't, all our lives aren't the same, aren't held to the same value. And that's not enough. So I keep praying, let's that the momentum continues. That it becomes easier for the next person and the person after that. And, you know, I have a friend from high school, Malcolm, and he was named after Malcolm X. His parents were very
mm-hmm.
involved in the civil rights movement. And at one point, and he and I talk a lot. He's out where a lot of all the rioting began. See, I'm saying it. No, all the protests began.
Mm-hmm.
And he talked about a while back about how he felt like he let his parents down because, you know, we're in the same place as we were before. And how, it, you know, how his parents' generation must look and say, what did we struggle for? if you're, you know, if you're only this far along. You know, it didn't, it wasn't the end. It was only a stop along the way. And I think the same thing is said for, you know, queer rights. I think the same thing is said, you know, said about misogyny. You know, I look at my mother and I think, oh my gosh, she's gonna, you know, maybe in her lifetime there will be a woman in the White House. But at the same time, I think to myself, you know, I don't know that it will come to pass. But as long as I know there's momentum that's going forward, and that maybe it'll come to a point where, you know, the next generation is going to have to struggle a little less and a little less after that, you know, hey, then it's worth my fight. As my sister once said, go ahead, you have my permission. Throw yourself up against that wall. And I said, I will, because eventually walls come down. And if my throwing myself up against it, even if I don't see a dent in my lifetime, that doesn't mean that I haven't shook some of the foundation.
Absolutely.
And that, you know, if enough of us shake the foundation, then walls will crumble. But yeah, without that momentum, it won't happen. We have to keep reminding these youngins to keep going.
And that's what I've been encouraging everybody, is like, as the news attempts to cycle things out, don't you lose that momentum.
Mm-mm.
Because that's what they're hoping for. I said, they're sitting in offices talking about this happened 10 years ago, and if we ignore it long enough, they'll put their own fire out. We don't even have to put their fire out. And I tell people, do not be distracted by media. Do not be distracted by any of those things. Remember the purpose in which you are fighting for. And I will say, I do feel as if this generation is doing a good job. I think they're doing a good job, and I pray they continue on with it. Because like you said, as long as we can shake the foundation, once that foundation is shaken, it may take some months, it may take some years, it may take another decade or two, but some things will be uprooted, because that wall now is not as stable and as strong as it used to be. That system is being broken down, and many times a system has to be broken down for a new system to be rebuilt, and I think we're seeing all of that now. So I am excited about the fight as well. So now let's talk about your personal journey. Let's get into your personal journey. Can we go back to your childhood and, you know, into adulthood and to how, what brought you to where you are right now?
I thought we had like an hour at the most here. That's a long time ago now.
Well, let's do a synopsis of it.
Okay, we'll do a synopsis. I was born at Chestnut Hill Hospital in Philadelphia. I'm a Philly girl. I went to Central High School. I was one of the, and if you're at all familiar with the city of Philadelphia, Central High School was an all-boys school. Girls High was right across the street. And the year that I was in eighth grade, a couple of girls, but it was a long time ago, I think it was four girls, finally won a court case to allow girls to be admitted to Central High School. And so wound up going to Central. I was in the first class that went all 4 years with girls, which meant that, you know, I would go to gym class and there might be one other girl in gym class with me. It was a very traditional school built on academics. And I went from being a big fish in a little pond to being a little fish in a big pond. And I think that kind of shook me a little bit. I wasn't prepared for that. And I want to say I wasn't as smart as everybody thought I was. I was, but I, it became easy for me to get distracted from my studies, because I had trouble with them. So I struggled throughout high school, but the one thing that stayed with me was my friends. Now I graduated high school in 1988. In 1988. I had to think for a second there. and we just celebrated our 31st school reunion.
Awesome.
And I say that because we didn't have a 30th. We finally did our 31st, which was really awesome because, we were, the school was very diverse, because it was a magnet school. I went to school with all kinds of different kids. I had friends who were queer, I had friends who were Black, I had friends who were Italian from South Philly. I had, just a very wide range of experience. And I grew up at that time in what was considered the most diverse neighborhood in America. My experience growing up was to see people like they were just like me. And to know that color of skin was just something to be, a difference to be embraced because it was something different about a person. And different wasn't a negative thing.
Right.
And so I think I was very blessed in that way. I had a friend who came to school one day. He wore a skirt. And I didn't get to see him that day, but I heard the story the next day that, he was bullied horribly. Back in the 80s, it was okay maybe for eyeliner, but that was about as far as a guy could go.
I was going to say he was very brave during that time
He was. Our principal was really wonderful and wound up giving him an option to stay with his support to the rest of the school day or to be able to go home. And so he wound up going home, which, I respect that just as much as I would have expected him staying.
Right.
And so, I think in a kind of unique circumstance, my dad was a pastor, and then he was, when I went into college, he became elected bishop. Everybody always thought, you're following in your father's footsteps. And I would say I'm a lot more like my mother than I am my father. people would say, oh, are you Mike Merkel's daughter? And I'd go, well, yeah, but really I'm Sue Merkel's daughter. Hi, Mom. I think they'll be listening if they aren't dead already. So hi, Mom. Hi, Dad. I went to college with the idea that I was with the idea that I was going to go to seminary afterwards, which I did. And I served a small congregation in Seattle City, down the shore, as we would say from Philly, in Seattle City in New Jersey, which was just south of Ocean City. I had gotten married, had my daughter. She's now 21, and we're hoping she'll be finished in college this year.
Awesome.
She and I have had our issues. mothers and daughters, you know, issues. And I'm a very proud mother now of her.
Awesome.
She's turned out to be an amazing person. I know I'm a little prejudiced because she's mine, but she's, I think, one of the most beautiful women I've ever known. She has a younger brother, Ethan, who just turned 18 this year, and he is severely autistic. So nonverbal, still not totally potty trained. And she really is his best friend. She, you know, there she is. She's from the day he was born and we brought him home to, you know, tonight. She has been his biggest caregiver, really. She always acted like the third parent in a lot of ways. And we put her in that position too, I think, because she just so naturally gravitated towards it. Her dad actually, their dad has them, and I forget where now, beach somewhere up in New England for a couple days.
Okay.
And she sent me pictures before the show started of Ethan at the beach and covered in sand. And, you know, like, I wish I could show them to you, but they're just amazing pictures. Which, you know, it makes me emotional because I think about just she's an amazing person. He's amazing too. You know, he's one of those people, he's cute and he knows it. So he's a troublemaker. Because he knows he can get away with a lot. So, you know, I have my two kids, and I also have three stepdaughters who are amazing as well. I have two step-grandsons who are incredible kids, too. You know, my marriage to my son and daughter's dad ended abruptly. And painfully. And, you know, you mentioned domestic violence. And yeah, it was a difficult marriage. There are a lot of, you know, now I can look back and say there were, you know, I chose to marry him for a reason. And, you know, I won't regret it because I have two beautiful children because I married him. But it was not a healthy relationship. And it ended the night that he sent me to the hospital and got himself arrested. And, you know, that was a trauma that that still impacts me today. And, you know, I had, after my second congregation, I left my second congregation in Connecticut after finally admitting that I was really suffering from depression, then was diagnosed with major depressive disorder, panic anxiety disorder, later with PTSD added on. Attention deficit disorder, and then fibromyalgia, which, you know, I think is a response to trauma. You know, fibromyalgia is your brain tells your nerves, or your nerves tell your brain, or there's a disconnect between your brain and your nerves don't talk properly to one another. They cannot have a conversation. And so, you know, when you have stress in your life, which is very hard to avoid, but, when you have stress in your life, you wind up, your brain can't quite interpret that the right way. So it tells the nerves in your body the wrong thing. So it will tell your body that you're incredibly tired, when you've done nothing. to be tired, fatigue, like you've been awake for days, pain in different parts of your body for no reason. And all of these conditions are chronic. And, you know, part of what happened to me, and I'm going to read it to you so I get it right, but I was looking at, sometimes I look at up quotes on different mm-hmm. topics. I like to do that. I collect quotes. But one of the things that, so I was looking at quotes on trauma, and one of the quotes that I found was, often it isn't the initiating trauma that creates seemingly insurmountable pain, but the lack of support after. And this, you know, this is exactly what happened to me. You know, the trauma, the physical trauma, and then the trauma of, you know, my marriage ending, and then the trauma of dealing with all of that wasn't really the thing that I ever got to mourn or deal with directly. It was just all the bullshit that wound up happening afterwards. It mm-hmm. was the church not being there to support me. And then, you know, getting asked stupid questions like, is there any chance for reconciliation? No, there's not.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was that constant fight, just to have people, you know, not be stupid. And to recognize that they had really made some mistakes, that I had gotten re-victimized. And that was the pain that I was dealing with. You know, the thing that I hated more than anything else for people to say to me was, oh, don't worry about that right now. You need to focus on taking care of yourself and your kids. Well, what the hell do you think I've been doing all this time? Maybe it mm-hmm. wasn't the best way of doing it. Maybe it wasn't the smartest or the healthiest way, but that's what I've been trying to do all along. No, that's not what you don't have the right to tell me that, because you're just trying to get out of a job. You're trying to get out of, that accountability part that I was talking about earlier, of saying, I messed up, of saying, we didn't take care of you the way we should have. We weren't there for you. We didn't support you the way we should have. I mean, they were the church, for Christ's sake. You know, you would think the church would be there, and they really weren't. And it's a kind of a constant thread that I've had to, you know, like I keep pulling it out of the sweater, and the sweater keeps unraveling, kind of thing. And you know, this is not to say that I don't love the church. I mean, I grew up in the church. I was always a defender of the church, because I, you know, my dad was in the business, and not just, because he was a pastor, but he was a bishop. He was a company man. And so, you know, I supported that because I knew some inside stuff, and I knew what the church did, because you have to have community to be able to get a lot of stuff done. You know, you want to feed the poor. If you're the only one doing it, you're going to get tired. But if you have
Absolutely.
A community of people gathered together under, you know, under faith in the same thing, or, you know, same being, same God, goddess, whatever it is, and you say, you know, out of that faith, we need to feed the poor, well, guess what? It's going to work better. So I was... You know, I remember a therapist asking me if I was surprised. And I said, no, not surprised, but I'm disappointed. You know that, you know, when your mama says, I'm not mad, I'm disappointed. That kind of disappointment.
Absolutely.
So that, you know, I went through a lot of that. And then I got really lucky. I met my wife. I won't tell you the full honest story because it's kind of personal, but we are poster children for OkCupid. I'll put it to you that way. We met online. It was meant to be.
Okay.
And I had only legit come out to my family that I was bisexual. I was 43 at the time that I did that, and then on Father's Day. The next year I met my wife. And we had a lot of stuff in common, including, you know, past marriages and some of the ways we looked at the world because of that, understanding of trauma, mental health, I want to say issues, but really illness. If I say it the way I mean it, I'll start to cry because she really is it's funny because we talked about having met us and remembering the two of us, and we often get the, you guys are so cute. I hope someday I find someone the way that you found each other, you know, that kind of thing. And I'll tell you what it is. I'll tell you what our secret is. And it's a secret, I think, to any healthy, real, good relationship, is that we talk. And we were just having fun with one another. We weren't in it to have, like, you know, to find a spouse. We weren't, you know, neither one of us wanted to get remarried. We just wanted companionship. And as it turned out, that meant that we were able to share things with one another that we would never have shared, I think, if we were looking for that. When you're out there looking, you tend to try to put your best foot forward. And so you won't, you don't show the other person all of the flaws or the, you know, you wait to fart in front of one another for a while. You know what I mean? Not that we did that right away, but in some ways and respect we did. You know, we cared of each other and we talked to each other and we shared with one another. We finally had to admit, kicking and screaming, that yeah, we were in love with one another. And that it wasn't just a passing thing. We really wanted to be with one another. And it was right for us. I think the universe worked overtime to make sure we were together. And I think God put that in place for us. I've told her that I could live through hell as long as she would live there with me. But I wouldn't want her to have to live in hell, you know. I could go through anything so long as I knew she was there with me. How's that for a good summary? That was a lot longer than a summary, but there you go.
No, that was perfect. That was perfect.
All right, awesome.
Here on the show,
that's
why I tell people my platform is different than the typical radio show. It's not a basic interview. It's a conversation. And the reason why I give guests freedom just to talk is because there's somebody out there tonight that's listening to your story. And that person is in some stage of where you talked about. You took us from from high school all the way to present moment. You talked about your marriage. You talked about your children. You talked about your divorce. You talked about your domestic violence. You talked about trauma. You talked about, you know, the second part of your life, your second marriage, and just the friendship you guys developed, the companionship you developed, and what you guys are experiencing now. You know, you talked about all of those processes. So somebody's going to hear that entire story, and that's going to be hope to them because, like I said, they may be in the first part, and they may just be like, you know, I don't even want to try to experience love again. I don't even want to experience it. I don't want to be involved with anybody. I just want to be by myself, you know. And closing, I did a podcast on, are you blocking your heart or are you guarding your heart? And one of the realities that I had to face about myself was that I was blocking my heart instead of guarding my heart. So I love how you walked us through each stage and even how you talked about sometimes the worst part, I'm paraphrasing, of trauma is not the initial trauma, but it's that there's no aftercare after you experience that trauma. And I think that's where a lot of people are missing the point and that they're trying to communicate to individuals how they feel. And all that person is thinking, well, you should be over that by now. That happened 20 years ago. That and they don't realize I never had the moment to get this out. I never had the moment just to lay on somebody's shoulder and sometimes just cry it out or talk it out or, you know, just process the whole thing out. So that's what I loved about what you were talking about as it related to the trauma. And then even how you talked about with your children, you know, coming from your marriage, that even though you experienced what you experienced in your marriage, you also showed that there was a blessing wrapped inside of, well, two blessings wrapped inside of it in this instance. So yeah, you didn't take too long at all. Now I do have a question for you. It relates to the lack of support. Now, with the lack of support you were talking about, basically you were saying, I don't hate the church. You know, you grew up in the church, all of those things. But how did that frame your mindset as it relates to ministry? Or did it, you know, alter your mindset or make you look at ministry in a different perspective, even in your execution of ministry, when you didn't have that support while you were going through?
Well, you know, I've been on long-term disability for, 12 years now. And that started from realizing that I had major depressive disorder. And I probably at that point also had the fibro and didn't realize it yet. And so when all this took place, I was sort of in an in-between phase. You know, I was a member of my former husband's congregation because he was a pastor there, a pastor of a church. And, you know, so I had taken on another role in ministry. I was also supplying. Which, you know, so on a Sunday morning, I might go to different congregations that didn't have a pastor that Sunday for vacation, or they were without a pastor at the time and were looking for someone. And so I was, and I was really enjoying that a lot because I kind of started to see that as my ministry. Was, you know, I was going in and I was doing, you know, maybe 2 hours or a little more on a Sunday morning and being there for people who wouldn't have otherwise been able to have communion or who might not have, you know, heard a message or heard a sermon. And for some people, I might have been the first female pastor that they had experienced. I come in with a very different energy than a lot of other people do because I'm only going to be there one Sunday.
Right.
And so, you know, if you like me, great. You know, tell, you know, I'll come back. If you don't, I'll never have to hear about it. And then I didn't ever have to hear about the stuff that happened Sunday night to Saturday night, you know, which was the big stress of doing that job, was not Sunday morning. That was my favorite part. It was the rest of the week that was hard, but that was really hard. And so the ministry itself, I had loved that. And I still wanted to do that sort of thing. I still felt called to do that sort of thing. You know, I'll pastor to a person, you know, on my porch, my front porch. And I've done that, you know, I'll pray with strangers sometimes, because that's the job that you do. It becomes part of who you are. And so you embrace that or you don't. And if you don't, then,
right,
you know, I wouldn't step foot in church again. But it's always been important to me. And, you know, my wife asked me earlier today, you know, how, you know, like, I can't imagine how could you go back? Like, how could you not, you know, feel shell-shocked every time you walk into a church and, or saw, you know, a male pastor or anything like that. And, you know, I don't actually remember what I told her, because I was pretty worked up at that point as we were talking about all that.
Mm-hmm.
And that's part of the PTSD. But for me, at least, it was never my faith in God that I questioned. And so I've always wanted to act out of that faith. You know, faith pushes you to do things you wouldn't do otherwise. And so that includes ministry. I did know people who were very good to me from the church. And I've known a lot of other women who have struggled in the same or similar positions that I have. Stories of female pastors who have had their, you know, their partner walk into their office and take their clothes off and say, "Don't you want to have sex with me?" You know, things like that. The trauma that women go through to do this job. And I still keep going because, you know, that's women in ministry. It matters.
Right.
You know, who was left at the foot of the cross when everyone else had run away? Who was left there? Who in
the women
when he was dying,
yep,
ministered to,
yep,
Jesus? You know, so to me, that's been something that, that holds me up. And, you know, I think in some ways it's given me a platform as well. Now,
mm-hmm,
I also had people who, you know, in the church hierarchy who, they really did a number on me. Things that you couldn't imagine a clergy person doing or saying. And so that's another, I think it's more of an incentive for me to hold people to a higher standard in some way, or to say, you know, this is unacceptable. We are the church, you know, and if anybody's going to get it right, it should be us. You know, the thing about God and forgiveness is, hey, if you make a mistake, if you screw up, you know that God's still going to love you and God's going to still accept you. But because of that, shouldn't we do even better than what we do, than
mm-hmm,
what we're often doing? And so I lost faith in the church But I didn't ever lose faith in ministry or in God. Because ministry is, I don't know, it's a different thing. It's not just being an ordained person. It's being able to build relationships with people in a different way. Because it's based on talking to them about their faith. Talking, sharing your faith with them, being with them in, you know, in the shitty circumstance, being with them during trauma. I think one of the realest moments that I ever had in ministry was going to visit a woman who was, she was elderly. Gosh, she was so frail. And I went into the hospital room to see her. And I, you know, I walked over to her bed and she, you know, I talked to her for like, I don't know if it was even a full 5 minutes. And she said to me, please help me get the nurse because I need to get to the bathroom right away. And we pushed the button and it was going to take too long. She didn't make it. And I stood there and held her hand while she messed herself. That was the realest moment I think I ever experienced in ministry because I was able to be there with her because I had my collar on in a way I would not have been able to be with her if I was just, you know, a friend stopping by to see her. And I think when you go into a room and you are there as a representative of Jesus, it's different. And I believe in that. And I still do. And it's not that I think that pastors should be extra holy. Just that as a church, we need to do better for victims of all types. We need to do better. Stopping misogyny from being a part of our existence. We need to stand up for LGBTQ people who are, you know, especially right now, transgendered persons, because they're like in such a bad position with this president. And bad position is just a bad way of defining that position. We should be at the forefront of saying, no, you don't, because Jesus wouldn't do it this way. I know plenty of pastors who did go out, and protest, but we should never have let racism get the way that it has gotten. I'm in a pretty white denomination. We should have taken responsibility a long time ago for the way race inflicts and deteriorates our civilization. Racism, not race. And yet we haven't. We're really good at talking about it, not very good actually grabbing it and saying, I'm going to actually make something happen. I've been telling people lately, don't apologize. I don't want your apology. I want you to fix it. I want you to do your job. If you can't do your job, don't say you're sorry to me for not doing it. Just tell me you can't do it so I can move on and find someone who can. Because there's too much crap in this world and I don't have time for it. And
absolutely.
I don't think anybody else did either. It's that part of me that's really done living with the trauma in my body anymore. Not being willing to continue to let those things happen, I think is that's where I'm at. That's sort of like that's the end of my story for now at least. Of where, you know, my biography is, of where I came from, where
awesome.
I am Yeah.
Awesome. Because I believe, like you said, everything that you said are part of the conversations that we need to have. But you said something that really hit home for me, because this is something that I talk about to my life coaching clients, that I talk about to those that come to our sessions that we have. I always talk to individuals from the mindset of, you know, looking at ministry, God, and church as something different, or some things different.
Right.
And you hit it. You said,
right,
you know, I kind of lost faith in church and the culture. I call it the church culture.
Mm-hmm.
But you said,
right,
I did not question my faith in God. And then
never
you outlined what ministry is. You outlined,
mm-hmm,
what ministry is. And that is one thing I tell individuals that even come out. And when they come out and, you know, their denominations or organizations don't agree with, quote unquote, the lifestyle, which I cannot stand,
mm-hmm,
to hear people say,
oh,
the lifestyle.
Yeah.
But I explain to them, you know,
mm-hmm,
you got to think about your relationship with God and what he's called and created you to do. And you have to find resolve in that and just do what he has called, created,
mm-hmm,
and designed you,
mm-hmm,
to do. And I said, if you can get to that space in life where it doesn't matter what others are thinking or saying, you're just focused on what you've been called, created to do, then you'll begin to see the impact that not only you're making on the world, but even how freeing it is to you as well. Because sometimes we take on other people's,
yeah,
baggage. We take on other people's bondage. We take on other people's thoughts and philosophies.
Mm-hmm.
I remember one of my family members had said years ago, you know, Cliff, I'm praying for you with your struggles with your sexuality. And I said, well, your prayer is wrong, because I'm not struggling with it. You're the one struggling with it. So you need to be praying for yourself and the struggles you're having with it, because I'm not going to carry your struggles with me.
Right.
You know, like, what?
Right.
You know, I'm not struggling with that thing. That's a struggle with you, and I can't carry that because I have enough I'm carrying on my own. So I don't know if you realize that we have talked ourselves off the air.
I noticed.
I have three more questions for you, and then I'm going to let you go. This has been great. I have enjoyed this on tonight.
Oh, so, I absolutely have too. All right, go for it.
The first question is, you've given us a lot over this hour, 45 minutes or so, because I talked for about 15 minutes in the beginning. But if everyone was to forget everything that you said tonight, what would be one thing that you would want everybody to take away from this conversation?
Wow. So it would be one thing that I made a note of, because my dad said, and I try to listen to what my dad tells me. He said, make sure you write some stuff down so that you have ideas of what to talk about if you need to, which was kind of apparently
that's true,
unnecessary.
Though.
But it got me thinking, you know, that was a good thing, is because I talked about communication with my wife and how it
mm-hmm.
really has been, you know, the secret to our relationship is communication. But I think we are really bad at how we communicate to ourselves. And the thing that, you know, when you talk about transformation, the thing that really helps me to transform or begin that transformation process when I needed it the most was I wound up in a great support group with an incredible leader. I met my best friend through that group. And one of the things that she taught us was self-talk. And that is basically that you talk to yourself the way you would talk to somebody that you actually loved and cared for. And I'll give you an example of how I made it happen with myself. You know, I used to spend every day, I found myself saying multiple times, I hate my life. I hate my life. And I finally got to the point where when that thought came into my head, I stopped myself. And I said, that is not true. I don't hate my life. I hate this moment, but I don't hate my life. Another example is, I was trying to build a little stupid shelf. And really, it was a little stupid shelf. And I could not get this stupid thing to work no matter what I did. Again, stupid, stupid, stupid. And so I started to call myself stupid. Well, that was really stupid. You're just stupid. And then I stopped and I went, wait a second. You're not stupid. You have a master's degree. You're smart. You can figure this out. What you just did was stupid, but that doesn't mean that you can't fix it, that you can't do this. And so when I started to talk to myself as if I was somebody that I loved and cared about, I actually started to love and care for myself. And that is perhaps one of the most important life lessons I ever learned. So it would be the thing that I would want people to remember or to take with them. Instead of, don't listen to what other people said to you. You know, all those things that my ex-husband would, all those names he would call me, the things that he would say to me, those were lies about me. He was angry. He wasn't, and, you know, for whatever reason, that's why he did that. But I don't have to believe that. And in fact, I don't. And I know that those things aren't true. They were lies. I don't have to believe lies. Why? Because it's a lie. You don't believe lies. So I started telling myself the truth. And that was that I'm awesome. And you know what? That's who you met that day, was awesome me.
Awesome. That is so important. That self-talk is highly important. Now, the second question.
Important.
Yeah, it is. It is. It will transform your life, literally. Like you said, it was at the beginning stage of that transformation for your life. Now, the second question is, on the show, we like to acknowledge what we call transforming transformers. And transforming transformers can be mentors, leaders, family members. But they are basically those who have committed to their own personal transformation journey or journey of transformation, yet they've also been a great big support in your personal transformation. So while they are transforming, they're also transformers, and they are actually helping transform transformers. So is there anyone in your life? And I usually allow up to five, and I know sometimes it's hard to break it down to five, but for the time that we have allotted, I have to either constrain it to three or five individuals
I'll just give you one. I'll just give you one.
Okay.
If I give you too many, I'll give you two. I'll give you two.
Okay.
My daughter and my oldest stepdaughter. They are two women who have really, I'm so proud of them, but I've also watched both of them come through their own traumas, come through their own personal struggles, and they are, when I have needed them, when I have needed support, I know that I have always been able to turn to both of them. Even when my daughter and I struggled with our relationship, if I was down, she would be there to breathe with me. You always need someone who's willing to breathe with you. You started the show with breathing. That was awesome. But she would. She would breathe with me. And speaking of breathing, my stepdaughter, I quit smoking back in December. And I think had it not been for Christiana, for my oldest stepdaughter, I don't know if I would have been as successful as I've been. Because she quit, I guess it was a year and a half or a year before I did. And that just, you know, she was somebody to inspire me. And both of them are transforming their lives in some real ways. And I never cease to be unimpressed, or I'm always impressed by them. And I, they're just, they're, all my kids are amazing. But those would be my two that I would think that I came to the top of my head right away.
Okay, now before I get to the last question that I end every conversation with, I want to give you the opportunity to tell individuals where they can find your writings, how they may be able to connect with you on social media, and any other things that you would like to share with them before we go.
Well, you know, I would say connect with me on Twitter. I'm at ChristineCM333, so that's with the C-H, Christine, the letter T, and then the letter M. And then the number 333. You know, I think that's probably the best place. You want to read some stuff, you can find me on Facebook, but hit me up on Twitter, and I'm happy to befriend you, whatever. Send you stuff I've written. I've written a lot of stuff about a lot of things. happy to share any of it with you.
Awesome, awesome. Now, here is the question of all questions. And after you answer
all
the
right.
question, I will explain to you why in every conversation on Transformation Radio with this question. So here it is.
Right.
Who is God personally to you?
All right. Well, first of all, my Jesus is a black woman. I didn't realize this.
Yeah.
You're laughing, but I'm serious.
No, I'm laughing because I know. Here's why I'm laughing, because I know you're serious and you're going to explain it too.
How do you know me already? I had a very significant experience in the therapy session one day, and went home. And decided I wanted to try to paint this experience. And it was, I don't even remember how it got going into this, but she was walking me through, you know, talking me through stuff and having me close my eyes and breathe and think about stuff. I don't know. And I had this image of, the story of Jesus on the boat, when he's asleep and the storm brews up, and all the disciples are scared shitless, and they run to him and they're like, Jesus, don't you care about us? Wake up, wake up. And he gets up and he looks at the, you know, the storm, and he says, peace be still. And everything is still. And they're like, who the is this guy? you know, it's kind of a running theme in scripture, but so I wanted to paint this picture of, you know, this glowing orange and yellow light that I had seen in this vision, because it was very, very affirming to me. And it felt really, really good to me. And I wept and I wept and I wept. Because it really was it was a big deal. And so I started painting this painting, and, you know, I got out my piece of canvas and I got out my paints and I started, and it just wasn't working. And so I decided that this glowing orb of light or whatever that was Jesus had to be more like a person. And so I started to paint this picture. And the next thing I knew, you know, Jesus was a black woman. I went, yeah, that's exactly right. I think a lot of it is, man, I have been so blessed to find myself reading and having connections with some incredible women of color who why haven't they been put in charge? Because they know how to handle stuff. They know how to deal with business. And they know how to be compassionate in a way that I don't know that any of the rest of us do. And maybe that's selling the rest of us short. But it was right for me to say, my Jesus is a Black woman. I just think it was, to me it was awesome when I realized that. So I really do kind of embrace that. And so my image of God is just this very curvaceous, long, sort of tangled up, braided, curly hair, and with wind blowing through it, and this very dark skin, and these full lips, and these big, deep eyes, and these beautiful breasts, and these arms that just are big enough to hold all of us in. And hug us like we're supposed to be hugged, like we're supposed to be held. If God isn't remotely something like that, I might turn around and go back the other way. I don't know. I often tell people I'm going to be surprised. I'm sure I'm going to be surprised when I get to heaven. But I think that there are a lot of people who are going to be far more surprised than I am. I kind of have this feeling that's what I'm going to encounter one day. That's who I'm going to see. And I'm okay with that. I'm good with that. I hope that's the case. I really do. I believe in it. I believe there's it makes me happy thinking about that. So I think that's who God is. Very wonderful woman. She's there to hold us.
Awesome. Now.
And tell the storm to stop it.
Now, I'm going to tell you why I asked that question. The reason why I asked that question is because I believe that as long as we live, we will never be able to fully understand the awesomeness or the weight of who the Creator is. However, I believe that when we encounter each other, we are encountering another dimension of who he is, she is, however, we identify the Creator. Your interpretation of the Creator is awesome to me, because what I got from that was what everybody thinks to be is not what is to be.
Mm-hmm.
And it shows, your personal experience with the Creator. And everybody that I asked that question on this show, and we've been doing this show for a year and a half now, nobody has answered the question the same way. Even if they give a generalized answer at first and the generalized answer sounds the same, nobody fully explains who the Creator is to them personally the same. So tonight you just introduced us to a new dimension of who the Creator is, and even made us even more aware for some of us that still may, because I tell people sometimes we're open-minded, but yet we still have some doors that are closed in our mind. So you have expanded our consciousness even on tonight for us to begin to view the nature of God in a new way. Because there are some people that struggle with the nature of God, and they need to see it from a female or black female's like big mama's standpoint, you know, because they've seen it as that father that just walks around and just angry all the time and just looking to punish and destroy this and destroy that, that they haven't seen that calm nature that will get you together, but at the same time will draw you in and hold you and let you know everything is going to be all right. So I thank you for sharing that with us on tonight, because like I said, it just expands our consciousness. That's why I laughed in the beginning. I wasn't laughing because of what you said. I just was laughing because I knew you were about to explain it in a manner where it made sense. Because we've had people, you know, I had all type of people on here. I've had former adult film stars on here, and their interpretation of God was powerful to me, because it doesn't matter to me. I don't care what you used to do, what you do now. I believe we all have the ability to communicate who God is. So thank you for joining us on tonight. Thank you for sharing all that you share with us. I really appreciate this conversation on tonight. Listening audience, I appreciate each and every one of you. Oh, you're welcome. You're welcome. Listening audience, I appreciate each and every one of you. Make sure you connect with Christine. I'm telling you, especially if you're struggling with a closed mind, you're struggling with a closed mind. You guys already know how I talk. We need the diversity of individuals in our lives to help us become more open to things, to become more open to the world, because sometimes we live in our closed mind, we live in our small community, and we think that that's how the entire world is. But every now and then we escape that small community and we realize, wait a minute, there's more to this world than what we've experienced. That's the same thing when we allow ourselves and our minds and our spirit to be open to receive something that has been told to us at times is demonic. But it's not that it's demonic. It's just that it was something that people didn't understand. And sometimes in church culture, whatever we don't understand, we seem to demonize. So connect. I encourage you guys to connect. Also, connect with me, all social media platforms. Type in Clifton Pettyjohn. If you want to know the next show and the other shows we have going on and the podcast and everything else we have going on, visit www.cliftonpettyjohn.com. Okay? Listen, guys, as I always say, create a great day, walk with purpose, and by all means, execute your vision. Peace.